National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Right here on Register Radio, Janetta Mello and Joan Frawley Desmond take a look at what happened at the bishop's meeting in Baltimore this week. Also, Janette and author Sue Ellen Browder talk about how she helped the sexual revolution hijack the women's movement. You are about to hear the confessions of a professional journalist thirsty for truth and where she actually came to find it. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm the producer of the show, Elena Rodriguez. Our editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, Janetta Mello, is right here and ready for very interesting conversations. Thanks for joining us, Janette. Our first guest is Joan Frawley Desmond, the Register's senior editor. She's an award-winning journalist widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media, a graduate of the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies of Marriage and Family. She lives with her family in California in the San Francisco Archdiocese, and she flew out all the way to Baltimore to report on location from the bishop's meeting this week. Janette?
Well, Joan, you spent a few days of the last week in Baltimore for the bishop's annual meeting. You've been to quite a few of these meetings. Do you know how many of these meetings you've been to?
Janette, I can't really count. I know how many children I've had, but I don't know how many USCCB meetings I've been to. Maybe that's old age. But I will say that my first meeting was back in the early 1980s, and it's so interesting, Janette, things that are similar and things that are different going back to those days. What I really recall was when I had to cover some serious disputes between the bishops on issues like war and peace and nuclear proliferation, another debate on the economy and what the proper balance was between prudential and judgments and basic social teachings governing the church's views about the economy. So those issues were going on then. And then, as you know, you had the seamless garment debate that do we have certain issues we focus on, or should they all be connected? Well, those kinds of issues still surface today.
Really? Were there any big contentions at this conference this week?
Actually, what struck me overall, if you consider where things were earlier with the Synod, and how contentious it seemed from afar, at least in the United States, looking at a lot of reporting and very serious debates and discussions by church figures, this seemed very calm. Overall, I would call it a calm meeting, calm to the point where, you know, journalists are looking for more conflict than they can find sometimes, just to be slightly jovial about it. But there was very few issues in dispute. They covered a range of topics. They released the pornography statement, long-awaited statement, which will kind of provide a framework that will hopefully help direct diocesan responses to this, you know, really serious scourge that affects marriages. And also, as I discovered in my own research, also affects the priesthood. So pornography was approved, but it didn't generate too much debate. There was, by then, I guess, all the discussions had already taken place, and there was general support for that.
Sure.
Faithful citizenship, getting back to my topic a minute ago, that provoked a little skirmish of debate, but at the end of the day, it had overwhelming support. This was the U.S. bishops' update to their 2007 voter guide, Faithful Citizenship, and
that's
they were
right.
asked to do a light revision of that, and that's what they did.
So that's the voters' guide. They discuss this every year just before a presidential election. This has been going on for quite some time, and it's really the same document that they've been issuing year after year with some very minor changes. And in the last 4 years ago, they didn't really do any changes. So they were looking at the 2007 document. What were some of the discussions? I mean, I realize it passed by an overwhelming majority. I think there were only 16 people who voted against it among over 250 bishops. But what were some of the concerns?
Well, some of the concerns were really articulated by a handful of church leaders. But it was interesting. I think because the overall mandate from the body had been to do a light revision, that is what the committee chair said he did. Cardinal DiNardo was led the effort to draft this light revision. And so there were just minor changes made to the introduction in the body. But some bishops suggested something more should have been done. Perennial issue, which comes up, as I alluded to earlier, is to what degree anti-poverty issues, concerns, should be given greater prominence than they are. The document does emphasize intrinsic evils, and of course those are issues like abortion, euthanasia, and related matters. And so the attempt to suggest that poverty should get greater prominence in it than perhaps was suggested by the introduction, I would say, Jeanette, that poverty issues were given a lot of concern. Mm-hmm. I didn't personally, just looking at it myself, it wasn't obvious to me that was needed. But I guess for someone that wants greater prominence, they would say, well, we want to see something really strong on this. And the argument was made by one bishop that this is the direction the Pope is going to, not that he's downplayed abortion or euthanasia, but that he really wants a church focused on outreach to the poor. And so this document should better reflect that. This bishop suggested this was sort of a document reflecting another time and place. Mm. And the bishops clearly disagreed with that. There was some intense discussion, and I was quite struck that Cardinal DiNardo very much defended the position of the committee. But at the end of the day, it passed, as you said, with overwhelming support. So I think, just to be clear, this issue usually comes up in every presidential election year. It doesn't come up all the time. So as we anticipate this upcoming presidential election, this was the time that they felt that they should look back at it. The thing I found striking, Jeanette, was if you look back at 2007, we didn't have the HHS mandate issue. Mm-hmm. At that point, same-sex marriage hadn't been legalized. So some of those concerns were voiced in the earlier document, in the earlier language. But now we have in some ways a changed landscape. And at the same time, the bishop said, you know what, we're still concerned about the same issues.
Right, right. There were the same issues then because this was stirring even back then. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Joan Frawley Desmond, and we're talking about the Bishops' Conference. The bishops met this past week in Baltimore for their annual meeting. Joan, you know, one of the things that happens at every bishops' conference is that the nuncio, the papal nuncio, gives an address to the bishops. This was Archbishop Vigano, who is the nuncio now. And what did his address focus on?
Well, it was really quite striking, Jeanette. He gave a very strong statement on Catholic education and the need to shore up the religious identity of Catholic education. He said, I'm just going to quote one part here. He says, educational leaders should regain firm command of the helm of their institutions through the storms of the present times. He said, the course must always be set by Christ and his church, never allowing influence or wealth to dictate what might be an improper orientation for a Catholic school. He said, whether you're in a religious order or not, the overall focus should be on the transmission of doctrine. I thought that was striking. Should regain firm command. I mean, what he's saying is there isn't firm command.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. It's actually very interesting. I mean, there's such a void, I think, in solid or people being confident, I guess, in the Catholic identity of a large number of schools. And so it's really great that he's calling for this. It's kind of interesting that he's choosing this time, I mean, to call on that kind of focus. And it makes sense, but you don't think of it immediately. I mean, we're in a time of increased secularization. And of course, things like same-sex marriage and the other crises that we are facing are often a result of losing our Christianity. So, it's a very opportune moment for us to focus on Catholic education. So I haven't read his address myself, but I look forward to reading it. Joan, we just have 2 minutes left here, and I know there's another important thing that the bishops discussed. It was the final statement that they released. It was not something on the agenda, but obviously they talked about Syria. What did they actually talk about?
Well, basically, they're concerned, I think. On the one hand, of course, they wanted to express their solidarity with the people of France and compassion for the individuals and families that lost loved ones. But they're also very concerned about expressing alarm at any attempt, I guess, as they would call it, scapegoating refugees. In other words, there's additional concern because at least one or more of the attackers in Paris, the terrorists, may have been a refugee, misrepresenting themselves as a refugee, and actually have been an extremist. And mm-hmm. So that has raised concerns here that perhaps refugees are not being properly vetted. I mean, Jeanette, the Register has done a lot on this issue, and
right.
The irony is that the pipeline for refugees is so slow because of security vetting. If 2 years or longer, some would say there is good vetting, but perhaps there have been lapses, and it's worth considering that issue. But the bishops are just saying, don't stop a program for welcoming refugees because of this event. You know, look at things, make sure that the vetting process is as it should be, but continue to welcome them. And related issues, of course, are whether Christians are getting their a fair chance at being part of that refugee process. And Jeb Bush and others suggested that Christians were less likely to pose a security threat. That prompted a whole round of attacks that he and others were trying to impose a religious test on the refugee process. I'm actually just finished a blog on that topic, and our readers can take a look at that shortly.
Absolutely.
But, just to say the bishops want to make sure that people continue to welcome refugees.
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be plenty more coverage or plenty more to cover on this. And Joan, I always appreciate talking to you on Register Radio. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Jeanette.
And thank you, Joan Frawley Desmond and Jeanette DeMello. When we return, the confessions of a journalist thirsty for truth and where she actually came to find it. She knowingly used her profession to help the sexual revolution hijack the women's movement. And wait until you hear what got her to turn around. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We'll be right back.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Elena Rodriguez. Jeanette lets us sit in on her next conversation, and it's a confession. But don't worry, it's a public one. Sue Ellen Browder is a freelance journalist who has appeared on Oprah, The Today Show, and hundreds of radio talk shows. Her work for Cosmopolitan, New Woman, Woman's Day, and other magazines has given her a lifetime of experience with the women's movement as it unfolded in the media, both on the public stage and also behind the scenes. She tells us how she used her journalism profession to help the sexual revolution hijack the women's movement in their search for truth, and where she came to find it. Jeanette?
Well, Sue Ellen, it is great to have you on Register Radio. We talked not too long ago about the Planned Parenthood videos that had brought to everyone's attention what was going on in Planned Parenthood regarding the selling of unborn baby parts. It's a horrible tragedy that we talked about. But now we're talking about a very interesting topic, and this is your memoir. It's your latest book, Subverted. And I read that book this week, and I have to tell you, I hardly know where to start in doing this interview and having this conversation with you, because the book was so good. Thank you for writing it. I'm sure writing a memoir is a very difficult thing to do and probably takes a very long time. How long was this book in the works?
It'll be officially 5 years this month.
Wow.
So it took a good 4 years of research and writing, and then some rewriting and fact-checking and all of that. So it's been a good 5 years in the making.
Yes, well, it's a superb book, so I hope everyone will read it after listening to our conversation. Now, this book, it's a history and a memoir, and that's why it needed so much fact-checking, because it wasn't simply your story. Your story was intertwined. And the subtitle of the book, How I Helped the Sexual Revolution Hijack the Women's Movement, really gives an indication of what historical context we're talking about. And one of the things that really struck me was that you show the difference between the women's movement in its origin and that it was separate from the sexual revolution. And I'd like to start with that very thing. How was the women's movement in the beginning?
Okay, well, when I was in college, the women's movement was gaining full force. It had been started in 1963 with Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique, That was the beginning. And women in those days, there were a lot of things that needed to be changed. I was fired in 1969 for being pregnant. You could only work 5 months, and then after that you had to quit with no promise of having a job again. Women could not, married women could not apply for credit in their own names. There were a lot of med schools and law schools that did not allow women to in. There were a lot of things in the women's movement that needed, that the women's movement was fighting against, inequalities in the workforce and in education, because women were pouring into the culture at that time, into the workplace, and they were finding all sorts of terrible discrimination. So that was the women's movement, and that was started by Betty Friedan, and then it was also started by a bunch of women in Washington, D.C., who, again, working women who were running into these log jams in their lives and needed some help. Now, the sexual revolution, which was at Cosmo, I went to work for Cosmo in the early 1970s, what I noticed there was the sexual revolution and the women's movement were two radically different movements. Betty Friedan called Cosmo quite obscene and quite horrible.
Right.
Cosmo was promoting the sexual agenda. It was good to sleep with a married man, good to take the pill, good or at least necessary to have an abortion to get ahead if you became inconveniently pregnant. Our Cosmo philosophy turned all traditional values upside down. So you had these two radically different movements. But one dark night in Washington, D.C. in 1967, they were joined together in the eyes of the media.
And that's right. And that chapter of the book had a very interesting title, and it was A Fly on the Wall of the Chinese Room. What happens in the Chinese Room in Washington, D.C.?
Well, now, this was all stuff that I researched as an investigative reporter. I was not there, but I was telling my personal story. So how are we going to go off and tell what happened in the women's movement without leaving the personal story? So I'm a fly on the wall in the Chinese room, and the reader is there with me, and we're watching what happened. The Chinese room of the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C. on November 18th, 1967 was the second annual conference of the National Organization for Women, and that was the night that they inserted abortion into the women's movement as a right. And they named eight rights that night. They were creating a bill of rights, a political bill of rights that was going to be their political platform, that is still the political platform that we're dealing with today. I mean, 50 years later, this political platform is still with us. And they had eight rights, and only two, and most of them were women shouldn't be fired for being pregnant. They wanted family leave, maternity leave for women. They wanted these very things that women really needed. You know, at that time, in some states, women couldn't serve on juries.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an entirely different age, and people forget that. But okay, so there were two battles that day over which rights would be inserted. Some of them were everybody agreed. But two of them were fought over. One was the Equal Rights Amendment, which is now history. That's long been almost forgotten because it didn't pass. The other one was abortion, which we're still fighting today.
Right. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? And there were only about 100 people in that room that night. And the abortion vote, Betty Friedan sprang it on everybody. They didn't expect her to do this. A lot of them didn't. It wasn't on the agenda. She just kind of popped it on them. And they had this vicious, vicious fight over it. It lasted till almost midnight. And after that vote, there were only 57 people that night that voted to insert abortion in the women's movement. And one-third of these very ardent feminists walked out of that meeting and later resigned over the abortion vote. We had a split in the women's movement right that very night that we're still fighting today.
That's right. And you mentioned the split. It's even groups that hardly can even talk to one another any longer, because they are so entrenched in their own point of view in this issue. Right. So the book is illuminating in what it presents in the historical factor. But it's also it's your personal story that's woven in that I think will really touch the hearts of so many people. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about the personal story, but I did have one question. Betty Friedan, you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that she was not for the sexual revolution. She was not interested in abortion at the beginning. So how did this happen? How did she pop this amendment or this right on the women's group?
Okay, you're right. Betty Friedan did not even mention abortion or contraception in the feminine mystique. The idea of reproductive rights was not even on her radar at that point. But there were two men, Larry Leder and Dr. Bernard Nathanson. They were the co-founders of what became the National Abortion Rights Action League and is now NARAL Pro-Choice America. And Larry's fiercest ambition, he was a population planner, and his fiercest ambition in life was to repeal all abortion laws. And he worked on Betty for years to try to get her to see his view that women needed abortion to be free. And he finally convinced her with a book that he had written. It was a masterpiece of propaganda. It was just called Abortion, but the subtitle, listen to this, it was called Abortion. Listen to the propagandistic subtitle. The first authoritative and documented report on the laws and practices governing abortion in the U.S. and around the world, and how, for the sake of women everywhere, they can and must be reformed.
Wow.
That's the subtitle of the book.
Wow.
This was a masterpiece of propaganda. It convinced Betty that abortion would help set women free. And somehow, Larry said that they had to recruit the feminists. He told Dr. Bernard Nathanson they had to recruit the feminists to get their abortion movement going, and he succeeded. Larry knew Betty very well. They were both magazine writers in New York, both Jewish atheists with Marxist leanings. They had a lot in common. But as I say, Betty had been a mother of three. Her book was made no mention of abortion. And even when she, in the year 2000, she said, ideologically, I was never for abortion.
Yeah.
Motherhood is a value to me, and even today, abortion is not. I believed passionately, she says, in 1967, as I do today, that women should have the right of chosen motherhood. For me, the matter of choice has never been primarily the choice of abortion, but that you can choose to be a mother. That is as important as any right written into the Constitution.
You would never know that. You would never know that looking at the feminist movement today.
No, because when they joined those two, when they inserted abortion rights into the women's movement that night, the next morning, Betty stood up, or the next Monday morning, she stood up. There had been only 57 people that voted that night for abortion, and it had been a fierce battle. On Monday morning, she told the press that she was speaking for 28 million working women all over America, millions of women emerging from our colleges, millions of mothers who were trying to go back to work. She basically claimed to be speaking for all working women. In fact, she was only speaking for 57 people in the Chinese Room. And the next day, the Washington Post ran a story that said, "Now supports the furthering of the sexual revolution of our century by pressing for widespread sex education and provision of birth control and the repeal of all abortion laws."
It's as if one woman just completely changed the course of history in that moment. I mean, it's just amazing. I was fascinated by that part of your book, Sue Ellen. I really, the historical elements of what you wrote and what you investigated are huge. Any woman who is interested in feminism or the new feminism needs to read this book. It's called Subverted: How I Helped the Sexual Revolution Hijack the Women's Movement. It's by Sue Ellen Browder, who I'm talking with here on Register Radio right now. And Sue Ellen, I do want to talk a little bit about your own story, though, because that's what drove you really to write this book. It's a memoir. It's in your own voice. It talks about your own experience. And how did you wake up to, I guess, the falsity of what was happening? Because you were working right there in the midst of it at Cosmopolitan Magazine.
Yes, I was. And I had a beautiful, beautiful marriage to Walter, and we had two children. And we had this lovely... I was living this lovely life behind the scenes while I was selling this hardcore Cosmo philosophy, basically to make a buck. I mean, Cosmo paid very, very well, and Walter and I wanted to be freelance writers, and we wanted to have our freedom. And I honestly, in those days, of course, would have no idea what would happen to all of this. So at that time, I thought, oh, this is just a fantasy. Women are not going to buy into this. Well, of course, they did buy into it.
Right.
They bought into it big time. And when I began to look back, I think the moment that I began to realize the horror of the damage that this had done and how much I had played into that was when Walter and I, after we became Catholics, we went to a conference where Dr. Bernard Nathanson was. And you know, he was one of the co-founders of NARAL, and he had taken responsibility, he said, for not personally doing them, but overseeing 70,000 abortions before he converted to, well, before he became pro-life, and then later he converted. From Judaism to Catholicism. So he was at that meeting, and he started talking about all the lies they'd told in the abortion movement to convince people that we needed the abortion rights. And I realized, well, I had done some research, and I realized that Kinsey science had been all flawed, and one scientist had called this propaganda masquerading as science. And then I thought, well, Cosmo, we lied there too. We made up a lot of those stories. They weren't really, those women weren't real that were jumping into bed with everybody. We made them up. And I suddenly realized, well, if the abortion movement was made up of propaganda, and Kinsey's sexual revolution was made up of propaganda, and Cosmo was made up of propaganda, it was all smokescreen.
Yeah.
And that's when I began to say, hey, I mean, and feel very guilty and contrite about that, and realizing the horrible part I had played in that.
I really hope that many people have the opportunity to read this book and are touched by the same kind of mercy that you were touched by in you know, the part you played in this, but now that you're turning it around to tell the story, and that truly is God's mercy.
Oh, so, absolutely. He's with us all the way.
Amen. So, Sue Ellen, thank you for writing for The Register and for all the work that you've done.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And thank you both, Sue Ellen Browder and Jeanette DeMello. You can read more of Sue Ellen's writings on ncregister.com. Do you know of anyone who may be interested in this topic? Point them to ncregister.com and click on the radio tab to listen or even to download the show. All Register radio shows are archived there. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, Joan Frawley Desmond, Sue Ellen Browder, Tom Price, and all of us here at the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and at the Register, thank you for joining us. This is Elena Rodriguez, and we will be here again next week for more of Register Radio.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.